Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by a thousand miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. Now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. How you doing? My name is Jamie Jordan, and this is another We Are Old and Grumpy edition of Gaming Uncensored, because this crap does not work. And of course, Tommy's sitting over there. What's up, man?
We are old, and you are slightly older than last time. I mean, we're always slightly older, I suppose.
Yes.
But you are officially slightly older, so happy birthday, my friend.
Thank you.
We just keep getting older. Like, that's just the direction you go. There's no turning it around, which the more you go this direction, the more you're like, hey, can't we go back that way? But we can't.
Speaking of being old, have you seen the thing that is on Discord that Logan made that we actually need to turn into a poster? I think the camera.
So phenomenal.
About to die. Let me. So I have technology issues over here. You have technology over there. So if you see weird stuff, we're sorry.
Yes.
But Logan made this thing, and I really honestly think we need to get it blown up and put it in a frame.
It's pretty phenomenal.
And keep it in both of our offices, because that basically represents us.
Pretty spot on. If you want to see it, go by the website, gaminguncensored.com, and join us on Discord, where you can see the mock-up of dead us still podcasting.
Yes.
Which I kind of like the thought of. Just like, death isn't going to stop us. We'll be here inconsistently forever.
Yes. Because apparently we don't know when to stop.
This is true.
I really... Every year that we make it a year longer, I'm like, this is going to be the year that he tells me that he needs to quit. You know, like, but at this point, the kids are old enough that we're on the other side of it.
Right. It should be getting easier soon instead of harder.
Right. Like, soon we're going to be like, they're going to be out of the house. And we're going to be like, well, what do we do now? and then we'll turn on the mics. And so... Yep. So, yeah, I'm thinking at this point you guys are probably stuck with us till we're 85.
Yep.
And why Logan's picture is so awesome.
Yes.
I like that so much.
Yes. And to mention, it is in reference to some assets that our boy Sam is working on for his own project that are phenomenally cool. That, again, you should go by the Discord to check out. So just a lot of reason to hang out over on the Discord, aside from good community and people chatting over there. But you get to see some of this cool stuff too.
There is some really, really awesome stuff going on over there. Sam is like unbelievable, because he just woke up one day and he was like, I'm gonna figure out how to make a game. He has started, like, there's animation and
it's freaking cool, man.
Environments, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Can we get that guy some funding, please? Like, if you don't want to fund us, please fund one of our guys. Because this is really awesome. And as of yesterday, apparently, you and I are going to be in the game.
Yeah.
We might be dead. We might be dismembered.
That's okay.
We're going to be in there.
I'll take it.
That's pretty awesome, and we really appreciate Sam and all that he's got going on. And I don't think I'm overstepping by saying that he's doing all of this with his son, Jack, as the inspiration, and I love that. If you've been around our community at all, Jack is a pretty cool kid, and he does awesome things, and he's different, and I really dig that.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. So go by GamingUncensored.com. Join us over on the Discord. You can get the link there. Also, while you're there, check out the Patreon supporters. Cabbage Jose, Narc, Duff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavosh, Chad, Zeke, Chris, Brigham, Sam, Andrew, Luke, Logan, Liz, Jordan, Gio, and Derek. And if you would like to also support us on Patreon, we would love to have you. You can click that Become a Patron link on the website. Give us some of your money. We'll buy some games, which we have done since last we podcasted. We'll talk to you about here in just a second. But we'd love your support. And you get the video version of these podcasts. If you would like to watch us, we'll see how it turns out today. If cameras stay steady. But if you would like to see us just talking into microphones as opposed to just listening to us talking to microphones, you can do that. So GamingUncensored.com. We appreciate your support a ton.
And at some point, we're going to be sitting in the same room talking into microphones, and that's somewhat more entertaining because we normally have some sort of beverage that goes along with that. And that just generally makes this much more entertaining.
Yeah, our routine right now is doing this too early in the day, so I'm still drinking my morning coffee instead of having a more fun beverage, which is a little disappointing.
Well, what's fun about when you're here is that the time of day does not matter.
Right. Yes.
We just sort of start.
This is very true.
So speaking of that, we need to talk about something that you snuck into my Steam. You're going to laugh at this because you're like, you sent me a text and you're like, I sent you something. And of course, I am about to not be here for a few days. And so I was trying to get work stuff squared away. And I was up very, 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 very late last night. And at like midnight, I look at my watch and I go, I really got to go to bed, but I got to see what this is that Tommy sent me. So at midnight, I booted up the rig and I installed a game called People of Note.
Yes.
That you sent to me, and I played about 10 minutes of it, and I got really nervous when it first booted up because it was like, please get a controller.
Mm-hmm.
And then I booted it up, and it was like, let's see how much rhythm you got. And so I got a little more nervous, and so I think People of Note is going to be a game that we're going to have to play together because I don't think that I have the manual skills required to.
So I did think about that before I sent it your way. I am almost certain you can turn off the rhythm aspect of like the combat because it's just a timing thing. Right. It's kind of like Expedition 33, not exactly, but you know, the pairing. But it's with the music because the whole thing's about music. We'll talk about more in just a second. But I think you can disable that so you don't have to do that. It's not like a necessary.
Yeah,
thing.
I saw and, that, but I wasn't sure what it was.
Yeah, I don't think it's essential. And I played a chunk of it on mouse and keyboard just to make sure that it did play via mouse and keyboard, which I was able to navigate the world and all that stuff mouse and keyboard wise. And so I can't speak to how well that will continue because I've been primarily playing it with controller because I play most everything with controller at this point, unless it's an FPS. And so, but I think you'll be able to hang. I'm not positive about that, but I think you'll be able to hang.
I'm definitely going to work with it because I think the theme of this show is going to be interesting games because not only did you send me that, but this week I was like, I got to play some games and I got to have something put together for the show that we're going to do this week. And so I downloaded a game myself, spent some Patreon money. We are whittling down that Patreon money. So if you would like to give us more money, we'll take it because we're spending it. And I downloaded Retro Rewind, which we will talk about in a minute because I know you've been playing it as well. But I have also gotten a couple hours into South of Midnight on the YouTubes.
Nice.
And I would like to say maybe not so much Retro Rewind because, you know, that's just about the way that we grew up. But South of Midnight and People of Note are very much... There's a lot of social commentary in there.
Yes.
About people that are not like us.
Yes.
And I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I really am digging both of those games. I'm not very far into either one of those games, but I've played both a chunk of South of Midnight and a chunk of People of Note, and will continue playing both of those. I think those are kind of the three games I'm playing right now, and so we're aligned on what we're working on, which is nice. People of Note, let me just the kind of premise of it really quickly, because people probably aren't super familiar with this game.
Yeah.
We saw it at Summer Game Fest last year and talked about a little bit of something that was interesting, and I remember comparing it specifically. I think it was maybe after Summer Game, one of the maybe Gamescom or something, but one of those we saw it. I remember specifically referencing K-pop Demon Hunters when we talked about it, because it's a musical game. Like it's like you're playing, the protagonist is a musician and artist, and like the game revolves around music in a lot of different ways. And so talk about how my kids are obsessed with K-pop Demon Hunters, and like this seems like a good time for a game like this. Well, now that it's out, we know a little bit more about it. It is like Final Fantasy meets musical, like K-pop Demon Hunters or something like that. It's not K-pop in its style, but it's turn-based combat and kind of exploration and like, but all in a music world. The thing that like I'll be real honest, the art style isn't my thing. It's fine.
Yeah.
But the thing that got me is that very early on in the game, you go to a recording studio, and the recording studio is called Cardioid Response.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, this is made for me. Yeah. Like y'all got me. Like if you're naming a recording studio after microphone pickup patterns, like that's my life.
That's right there. That's some geekness right there.
It is. Like, and so
you gotta like, that's not just something that somebody didn't just pick that. There are audio people working on this game,
and that was
obvious.
That was the key to me. It's like, this is very clearly people who are in this world and not just kind of tangentially trying to make a game about like the music industry or whatever, but are actually, you know, like aware enough of this world that there's going to be stuff in it that goes over a lot of people's head that we will understand because of where we're at. And also there will be a lot of stuff in it that we will probably miss because it's different sensibilities and different kind of pop culture than what we consume. And so I like that. I like that it's both like hits me in a soft spot of me where I am professionally, but also is probably going to be a little bit eye-opening for some other stuff. And so it's apparently a relatively short game, which I appreciate. great. I don't need a super long RPG, and so it's apparently pretty condensed. But is turn-based combat a la Final Fantasy, is music-oriented with all the music puns and ridiculousness through there. And again, if the art style was different, this would be a like perfectly tailor-made game for me. The art style is the only thing that I'm not in love with. Everything else about the game is like, oh, yeah, this is mine.
Let's talk about art styles for a minute, because not art styles. Let's talk about music for a minute, because South of Midnight also has really, really great music.
Fantastic. It's so good.
So I was hoping that you were going to be vibing with it, because I've watched maybe 2 hours of South of Midnight. Like, I've just gotten started.
Yeah.
And much like people note, it's a short game. It's about 6 hours on YouTube, and I'm about 2 hours in. And look, we've said since the start of this show that we love story-driven games.
Yep.
And there are story-driven games that have great stories, and we love them. And then there's this. And what this has that not a lot of games have, and I hope people have noticed the same way, it has a sort of a tone to it, and the way that it tells a story, the presentation, the way the story is told, is ridiculously good.
Yes.
Like the narrator and the book and the, like, it's so good.
Yes. And the art style in South of Midnight is fabulous. I love the look of South of Midnight. I really dig the visuals of that game. The thing that South of Midnight struggles on that you probably don't realize quite as much, but I'm sure it translates some on the video, is that the gameplay is just kind of okay.
Yeah.
It's not a super strong gameplay kind of game, but it is a really fun, interesting narrative that, like you said before, is completely different than us, because it's a protagonist that's a young Black woman in the South dealing with the kind of rippling effects of slavery and her ancestors and family dynamics and this town that she's from, all this kind of stuff that's really interesting and couldn't be farther from our lived reality. Yeah. But it's one of those things that like makes video games so great, and we'll get into I think I actually pulled, we'll get into it here in a little bit with one of the show notes potentially, but like the fact that you can kind of transport to a different experience than what we've ever had is so cool, and again, one of the best things about video games. South of Midnight does that for me, and I really, really dig it, and it is a compelling story. It is, again, music is great in it. The music is really, really good.
The visuals
are really cool.
It's got that Southern New Orleans style.
Yes.
Like down in the Louisiana swamp kind of like sound to
Dirty
it.
Dirty jazz kind of thing to it.
Yes.
Yes.
It's really good.
Yeah.
And I'm really like, I've been frustrated with myself because I've had 8,000 things going on. And this is one of those things that I just want to sit down and watch it.
Yeah.
And I have not had time. Like, it's one of those things that I have been watching while I'm working out, because that's the only time that I can find to like watch it. But it's just the way they did it is so well put together. I will say on the gameplay, the gameplay could be better, but really what it is that they took Prince of Persia and they put it, that's kind of what it is, essentially.
Yeah.
It's
a lot of platforming, and the platforming is clunky. The combat's you get like some abilities that you can use to kind of push and pull and shield and all this kind of stuff, and it's all fine. But the game is just not about that. The exploration, because the world design is super cool, and the narrative are what really sells this game. And every time I come to like a combat, story beat, I'm like, ah, dang it! All right, let's get to it. It's not hard.
It just is like.
It feels like they were like, well, we got to have combat because it's a video game. And so they kind of threw that in there, but it doesn't feel as meaningful. There's some encounters that are more fun. It's just the kind of rote encounters along the way are just kind of meh. They're fine, but they're not why you play the game. Use something like South of Midnight, you know, is like a solid like B title kind of game, to use a comparison to something that is far superior quality wise, but that does both those things really well. Something like God of War.
Yeah.
Like this has that same kind of pacing and how it tells a story that God of War does, but God of War has ridiculously good gameplay, and this is just really lacking that. And you feel it, like there's just a qualitative difference there, and that's fine. Like not every game has to be exceptional on every level, but just understanding that like what you're getting into experience wise with this and what you're probably not going to get out of this, and understanding that and still knowing that it's going to be a good time. People know very much the same way. It is a solid B game. It is not going to be a game of the year contender, but it is a solid like weird quirky little indie game that's worth checking out if it like appeals to your sensibilities as it does ours.
Can we talk about, this is going to be a weird place to go with the last few titles that I've installed, but I really appreciate that the last few titles I've installed have been small. Like only a couple of gigs, not taking up a lot of hard drive space. Not like I really appreciate that as somebody that is managing space.
Yes,
that means a lot. And the thing with people of note, I'm assuming it's not going to be voice. They're, it's kind of old school.
It's back and forth. Yeah, there's a lot of text to it, but there is some voice to it as well.
And if you can do that, and still have a small package, I really appreciate that.
Yeah,
and it has allowed me to install a lot of games recently that just don't take up a lot of space.
Yes.
Because the other one that we're going to talk about, which it might be the rest of our time, because we're both so completely in love with this thing, is Retro Rewind. I just have to say, how did we not think of this?
Right?
Like, how did we not do it? Like, because it's exactly what we've been talking about since we started this show. And the love that we have for the video store and going and experiencing that and every aspect of it.
Yep.
Like, it's awesome. And one of the first texts that I sent you was like, okay, I just spent an hour rearranging bad movies on my shelves. like what does that say about me as a human? Because I wanted my display to be correct. And it's so wonderful. I'm gonna let you start because I'm curious how you've gone about it. I bet you're a little bit further ahead than I am.
Yeah.
Because I just haven't had time.
It is, like, first of all, let me, like, qualitatively say, like, if this isn't nostalgic to you, you're not going to care, like, probably at all. Because it's a weird little sim game that if you didn't grow up going to Blockbuster or your local videos, because I lived in a town that we weren't big enough for a Blockbuster, so I had All-Star Video was my video store growing up. If you didn't grow up with that, this is probably not that appealing to you. But if you did grow up with that, like, it's just pure nostalgia. it's like Power Wash Simulator is my closest analog to this of a game I've gotten super into. But there's a lot of other, there's like Car Mechanic Simulator and PC Builder Simulator, play all of those kind of games that you, like you do something that like on the surface seems like kind of a dumb reason to make a video game about, but then like you start playing it, it like just connects with you in a way.
Yeah.
And this has that kind of just satisfying element to it in a different way than something like Power Wash Simulator does, which is just pure like satisfyingness. This has that same quality kind of packaged a little bit differently, but it's just nostalgia, and it's just like, hey, I'm running a video store, and like that's what I grew up going to, and I'm just like, this is cool. And it's the same thing, like, who cares what shelf my movie is on? I do. I wanted to say the right thing at the top, you know, yeah, like whatever thing.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. I got and when I accidentally put here, I got my horror over there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When I accidentally put a movie on the wrong shelf and it says mixed at the top, I'm like, no, I can't go find it. Where is that? You know, like, and all the like, it's just ridiculous. But it is, you know, like you walk in the first day, quote unquote, and you just have a empty room with a counter, and you got to go buy shelves, and you got to buy movies, and you start putting them out, and you get people coming in, and you check them out, and you have to check your movies back in. And after a little while, you get to hire an employee, and that makes all the difference in the world. That really changes the game.
Unless
when you get to
decide
hire an employee.
That you're not paying them enough. I heard that's a thing.
Yeah, you can make them work more, and they may quit if you make them work faster. They can, I've found out, like call in sick. So one day, like my employee showed up, and then she's like, I'm not feeling good today, so good luck. And I'm like, oh, I gotta go do everything again, like I used to do, or whatever, you know. And so anyway, but it's like, you know, kind of fun in that way of like trying to manage, you know, multitasking and manage a business, and getting to see like one of, you know, super fun things, because it's like 1990s video store. And so you have all these like imitation movies that are, you know, like movies that we grew up with, but Jumbo instead of Rambo.
Yeah.
And what Bad Dreams on Mel Street or something, I don't remember what it was, but you know, like it's all this stuff that's like kind of like what we grew up with. There's a shady like black market dealer that shows up in the alley, and you can go buy adult movies from him and have, you know, like your adult section. And it's just absurd, and it's ridiculous, and it's fun in its absurdity and ridiculousness. And I'm super digging it, and it's like not a game that has any meaning past that nostalgia, but that nostalgia is fine.
And the thing that got me about it is the level of detail that these people put into this title, because you have everything. You have the concessions. You have the ability to get concessions.
Yeah.
You have, when you check a movie in, this is hilarious to me, because I checked in like 4 or 5, and then I got the one that needed to be rewound.
Yes.
So I had to turn to my left and put it in the rewind machine.
Yeah.
And like do the whole thing. And that just, it literally made me laugh out loud.
Yes.
And
it makes you remember, be kind, rewind, like
yes,
the stickers that were on all of your tapes when you rented them back in the day. It just, yeah.
And can we just talk about, because this has really made me think about what an idiot I must have been when I was a kid. Because I know you did the same thing, get out of school on a Friday, and the first thing you do is call the video store and go, yo, man, can you reserve
right
this title, please? And the first time that I got that call, I was like, I do not have time for this.
Yep.
And they wait till like the very end of the day to come in.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, man, I was a jerk. Why did I ever call and ask somebody to reserve? Because I did every week.
Yep.
Like, man, reserve me a copy of that.
Yeah.
I had no idea. Like,
I remember the name of the manager at the video store when I was a kid. His name was Doug. Like, I was on a first name basis with Doug that ran All Star Video. Like, and that's like, I'm now like, oh my goodness, I'm Doug. Like, this is living as Doug. Like, this is what Doug's life was. It just, yeah, it cracks me up. The one thing that's missing, I've been curious, I don't know how much like resources this team has or whatever. The one thing that's missing that is not true to our experience as kids is they don't have video games. Like, it's just movies at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, give us some DLC that adds in video games to this whole equation, and then we're cooking. Then we're gonna be really trucking.
So you have quite a bit of ADD.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just have to bring this up because I did this, and then I did it, and I immediately thought of you. When I bought the shelves, and you had to figure out where you're going to put the shelves.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to put the shelves on the wall opposite of the door so that when they walk in, they're going to see all the movies. When they walk in, they don't have to turn their head. They don't have to do anything. They just walk straight. Like, to me, that's the most obvious place to start. And then when you start running out of room, of course, you put shelves wherever. But like, yeah. That's what I did to start. Did you do something similar?
Nope, I did it on the sidewall.
Okay.
And I was like, I want it as close as possible to start with. So when I'm running like movies back and forth, I don't have to run all the way across it. Now, I've got to the point that I've filled up, you know, the sidewall, the back wall, and started having like a shelves in the middle of the, where I haven't expanded yet. You can get to the point where you can expand your building and make it bigger. But getting kind of, you know, shelves in the middle of the room as well. And so now I'm just running around all the time putting movies back. That's when you get an employee, you can make the employee either like work the return station or work the checkout. And so I hired an employee for the checkout. And so I'm in charge still of returning all the movies back to the shelves because I want to organize them the way I want to organize them because I'm a control freak.
Yeah.
And so, like, half of my time is just, like, going and scanning movies. Oh, that one needs to be rewound. And then going and putting it on the shelf and then trying to figure out how I can upgrade and do all that stuff. Again, it's super dumb. It is just a dumb game. But that's what makes it really enjoyable. And like, I'm like, I got to go put in a day on that before I go play something else.
But, like, they put a calendar in there for, like, special holidays for the... And I got my first like new release movie, which was a reference to The Color Purple, I think.
Yeah.
And you get the stand up that comes with that if you buy like five copies. Like they did a lot of stuff. Oh, that's the other thing. Okay, so I have spent a fair bit of my available money actually buying good movies because, you know, you can, especially at the very beginning, you can get like four or five just grab bag boxes of movies that are all basically average or bad.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to be the video store owner guy that has all the crappy movies. I got to get some good movies in here. So I actually spent some money and bought some good movies. And I wondered how you... went about that.
Yeah, I love it because I did the opposite. I'm just the bulk guy. I'm like, just give me all of the quantity. I'm just filling up shelves. I don't care what they are. And so, like, I just have trash on everything. A good movie here or there. But anytime, like, a customer comes in because people come in and, like, request. They're like, I want drama. Make it something that's good. I'm like, dang it. I got to go find a good movie in all this trash I got. And so I'm just, like, scanning shelves. Like, which one of these is actually good? Oh, here's one that's actually good. So, yeah, I've bought a few, you know, individual ones, but almost my whole inventory almost is just from those grab bags and new releases. Like, that's all I
hilarious.
Buy,
so.
Yeah, I've got tons of movies, and you know, people come in and rent them, whatever. So, yeah, but you sell candy bars and slushies and popcorn and cotton candy, and you can get a like clearance bin. So when you're ready to get rid of some of those bad movies, you throw them in the clearance bin, and people can buy them from there. It's just like, yeah, this is exactly what we grew up with. It's just amazing. I love it so much.
Like, and I only put a couple hours in. Like, I'm 4 days in, and I've only played for a couple hours. But the reason I've only played for a couple of hours was after that 2 hours was over, I was like, okay, I got to be careful with this because this could suck my entire day. Like, I could just start playing and look up 6 hours later and off we go. Which, by the way, I have to talk about actually running the register.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what your first job was. Mine was basically what I'm doing now, which was a freelance video job, and I was doing video for people and audio for people even way early in my life, and so I never had a chance to work retail. And so this is my first opportunity, like, dealing with customers and like counting money and all of that. I'm grateful, which here's me being old. Here we go. If you are listening to this show and you don't know how to count money, please, for the love of Mike, go learn how to count some money. Because I know it's happened to you. You've been in a store where the kid working the register does not know how to count back your change because you give them too much or too little or whatever.
Yep.
And like, because of that, I've experienced that. Because of that, now doing this, I'm super anal about, like, okay, here's what I got to get back, and I'm going to make sure I get it right. And
yep.
And I don't know if it had that same effect on you, but, like, I'm thankful that I like, still know how to count money.
Yeah. For sure. My first jobs I actually got a little bit of pay for when I was very young, probably 10 or 11 or something like that. I was working in a concession stand at my grandma had an auction house of all things. We'd have auctions on like Saturdays twice a month or something. I don't remember that, but I'd work the concession stand, and so I'd have to make change. And so one of my earliest jobs was doing this exact thing. But in a real practical sense, like, this is one of the things that my daughter struggles with, because, like, She doesn't deal with physical money. Like, it's very rare. But in school, they're learning, you know, about counting money and that kind of stuff. And I'm like, oh, I need to sit her down in front of this, because, like, this would at least make her have to think about that, because there's no, like, card option in this game. Everybody pays with cash because it's the early 90s. And while there were cards in the early 90s, like, nobody rented movies.
No, we all used
like,
cash.
Everybody had cash.
I still carry cash.
Yeah.
I mean, not as much as I used to. But,
for sure. But yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm like, I need to sit her down in front of this so she can practice on counting her change, because it is the first time that I was like, I got count change. This is weird. And then you just kind of get a rhythm of it. You're like, I got to remember.
And
it
was like, okay. And I love the way they set up the register, because, like, there's, if you've ever done that job, there's like 14 different ways to get the money right. Like, what they did was quarters, dimes, and nickels. And, like, you can get it right however you want to get it right, as long as it's right.
Yeah.
And I love that they did that. Like, yeah. I love when a customer's like, is checking out a movie and it's like 10.50 or 11.75 or something. Because you have to figure it out. Am I going to give them three quarters, or am I going to, you know?
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yes. It's it's ridiculous and stupid, and also, again, for a certain audience, which is definitely us, incredibly fun. It's a great multitask game for me. Like, that's the biggest thing, is like, I'm just doing other stuff, and so I can just have it running. I can do stuff. It's one that, like, now that I have an employee, like, I can just let it run for a little bit, and I can just stand there while I'm working on something else and glance over at the screen and just see if there's, like, a customer that needs attention or something. But it's getting to where it's a little bit more kind of self-automated. And yeah. So, like, I can manage it without having to be active in it, which means I could be working on other stuff while doing it, which is great. Like, obviously, the other two games we've talked about that are story-driven, I'm going to spend more time with. But that's just obviously harder to multitask with, and this is something that's easy to multitask with. Again, going back to my love of Power Wash Simulator, like, it's something I can just reach over and grab the mouse and spray for 2 minutes and then do something else and then reach back and grab them. And there's no penalty for that. There's no real, like, there is a time element to this game, but
there is, it's
not crazy. It's not something that punishes you in any real awful way. And so, stupid and fun.
That's the thing that got me about the checkout, was I got to be quick with this money because they're going to get mad and I'm going to lose customers or whatever.
Yeah.
I haven't yet. I think
I haven't either. I don't know if that's a thing. You would think that's a thing that could happen, that it gets too backed up and people get mad. I have lost customers because I make them pay for, like, late fees or broken videos, and they get mad and they, like, just push everything off the desk and storm out, and you have to go pick up all the movies or, like, the popcorn box or whatever. I'm like, punk, what are you doing, man?
Yeah.
Like, screw you, man. You have to pay. Like, I always make them pay. I've never said no.
That's one thing I was going to ask, because that was something that we had to deal with as kids. Like, the guy's like, you got late fees, and you're like, And of course, back then, like, we didn't have a lot of money, and so
we were strategic about it, me and my friend. So when I was growing up, we actually had two places for a while that we could rent movies and video games from, the All-Star Video, which was my primary place. But we also, our movie theater, our local movie theater in the small town I grew up in, also like rented movies and games. They had less of a selection. But if I had a late fee at All-Star, I'd go to the movies. Or if I had a late fee, I'd say to my buddy, hey, man, I got a late fee. You want to get this game? And I'll get the next one after I get my allowance or whatever to pay my late fee. If we were, like, super strategic about that, and we'd just be, like, rolling late fees over and all that kind of stuff. Like, just the crazy. Because, again, this is getting nostalgic. We'll move on here in just a second. But back in the day, we're talking about, you know, like, Super Nintendo games here. Like, you didn't have saves on your console. The save existed on the cartridge. And so if you're working on something, and I've talked about this on the show many times before, I barely ever bought games as a kid because I grew up quite poor. But I could, you know, swing $2.50 to go rent a game or something. But once I had the game in my possession, and I had a save file on that cartridge, I'm like, if I give this back to him, somebody's going to erase my save. Yeah. I had to just keep this. And so I would rack up the late fees because I'm like, I just got to hold on to this until I beat it because I don't want to lose my progress. And I'm not, at that point, it doesn't matter if you go buy the game because there's no way to transfer a save or anything like that. And so I racked up late fees all the time to get my video guy. He knew. And I'd bring it back in, you know, like 2 weeks late. He'd be like, did you finish it at least? So, yeah. He's like, okay, good, but you got to pay. Like,
here's the thing. I can't believe we're talking about this because I want to tell you what changed my life as far as the late fees went. And that was when Games Plus started doing the 7-day rentals. Yeah, I don't know if you ever experienced that or if you had a place in Barrington that did a 7-day rental, but you could go into Games Plus here in town and do a 7-day rental. And they also did trade-ins. I had a kid that I went to school with that I don't know how he did it. I don't know how he made it work because he always had the newest games.
Yep.
And he always traded for them.
Yep.
And, like, he traded like four games and get the latest, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a friend that was exactly the same way, that just was always like trading in stuff, always had the most recent thing. I never got into that world. I was never a game trader, but I felt like there was this like whole economy around it that like I didn't understand because like it was a big deal. I was a renter, not a trader, not a buyer, but I feel like those were the like three main ways that you got games back in the day.
And yeah.
Now it's just you buy them or you stream them. Like it's all online, but to be young.
Yeah. It's so much fun. If you have a chance to play it, but go
especially
play
if you're 40 plus, as we are, like you're going to appreciate the nostalgia of that. So all that said, we should talk about a little bit of news. There's not a whole lot, honestly, that's happening, but a few things worth mentioning here. We'll start with Microsoft, because for some reason we're starting with Microsoft a lot lately. Yeah. They're like both the most struggling and like the most newsy. So our new CEO, Asha Sharma, is making news again, as she is prone to do, and it seems like we'll continue to be prone to do. This time for something that I think most people are going to agree with. No solution given here, but in a leak memo from Microsoft, Sharma says in the memo, quote, short term, Game Pass has become too expensive for players, so we need a better value equation. Long term, we will evolve Game Pass into a more flexible system, which will take time to test and learn around. Doesn't give any prescriptions past that, i.e., it doesn't say we're going to lower the price of Game Pass. So don't hold your breath about that happening. But at least, I mean, no shock here. Everybody in the industry realizes that Game Pass is overpriced. We can talk about the value proposition of it, and we have on this show and everything else. But we both agree that it's more money than we would like to spend on it. And would be more conflicted about what we spend on it if not for the Patreon. So thank you, Patreon guys, for helping us a little bit with that. I'll mention a game that's on Game Pass right now that is huge. And if you haven't played, you should go play it. But for right now, Game Pass being a overpriced, valid. So at least the new CEO is recognizing this kind of fundamental problem that is kind of staring down the face of Microsoft. What the solution for that is not as easy, because it's not just as simple as saying, okay, we'll just drop the price back down to something that's more reasonable, whereas that might make consumers really happy. That would obviously not make stockholders super happy, or a lot of other people super happy in the equation. And so it sounds in the like, quote, we need a better value equation is how do we convince people it's worth it at this price point, as opposed to reducing the price point, is what I'm kind of reading in between the lines there. And I don't know how you do that. I have a feeling it's going to be like, look at all this first party stuff that you get on day one really being the driving factor and that thing.
And I want to use another industry that is big right now and talk about the same thing. I told you that a couple of weeks ago I started using Claude. You like Claude, I like Claude. I think we both, that's our favorite AI model, probably because of what it's capable of. And it makes, I don't know how you, I have some idea how you use it and how it probably makes your life easier. It makes mine easier because I can put stuff in a folder in a project and be like, hey, it knows what I'm working on. So if I'm working on social media for the show, which I am, I hadn't told you that yet, but I'm working on a plan to like make it not suck. And Claude's really good for that. My issue with Claude has been I'm on the $20 a month for subscription, and I've been on it for about 2 weeks, and up until yesterday I was hitting usage limits every single day, and they are on a 5-hour rolling window, so if you hit it, like, you're done for 5 hours. And the way that I had to use it last week was like I had to schedule my day around getting enough quad usage, you know, like starting at 7 or 8 a.m. And so that if I hit the window, that I would have a couple more shots throughout the day to use it when I needed it. And it's been really irritating because I don't really hit limits on the other systems. I don't like I've hit limits on ChatGPT. I've hit limits on Grok, but it's much harder. And the reason that I want to continue paying for Claude is because at least right now, Claude is so much more capable as far as what it can create than any of the other three. Yes, I'm irritated about the limits and coming up against that, but it is what it is because it's doing stuff that the other three can't do. And that's kind of where we're at with Game Pass. Like, I railed on that for 3 weeks that it was too expensive and they had to do something. But it's there's still nothing else out there like it that does that. So I'm going to pay it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think, the big thing is that there's just no direct competition that pushes them to readjust. Like, their only competition is indirect of what they're charging for Game Pass because they don't have a subscription service that is doing exactly what they are. So they're having to compete with more traditional ways of purchasing games or subscription service model of game distribution. And it's, they're kind of just figuring it out as they go, what works, what doesn't work, that kind of thing. Again, even if consumers are telling them, this is probably not great,
and if
they
you...
still don't have that direct feedback of somebody else undercutting them on price going, look, we can do it at this cost and consumers will pay that and we get more people or, you know, we are able to offset the loss in this other way or whatever it is that happens in competition because they don't have that just clear, direct competition like the different AI models very much do have that clear direct competition. They're all doing very similar things, but in different unique ways. Like that matters a lot.
Yeah, it does. And if you look at Anthropic right now, like I went online a couple of days ago just to see what people are saying, and they're getting torn apart by even Max subscribers that are paying $200 a month. They're all like, hey, I'm hitting limits and I'm paying $200 a month. And the discussion is that, hey, it's not about you. They are going for those enterprise contracts and you know, the tens of thousands of dollars. They don't care about your $20 subscription or your $100 subscription right. or your $200. And that may be true. That probably is true. And that is not something that Game Pass has. I mean, yeah. Where Game Pass is different is that if Microsoft gets tired of messing with it, they'll just shut it down. Like, you and I both use Google a lot. Google is notorious for having a great service and it rolls for 3 or 4 years and they're like, yeah, it's not doing what we wanted to do, so we're sunsetting it. And you're like, I mean, that's just what they do. Microsoft could do that with Game Pass at any time.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And very well could. Or yeah, we'll see what happens. But it's fascinating to hear her say, even if it was leaked, like, and I use that in quotations, because like they knew this was going to become public. This is part of their PR strategy here, is to have this memo leaked to the press and people talking about whatever. So we're kind of falling into that trap, but rightfully so. Like, that's the point. They're trying to make some headlines with that, and they are. But at least it says we're looking at this differently than the previous leadership without saying, Phil, what were you thinking about doing this or whatever it is? You know, like, that's obviously not the direction they're going with it. But it's kind of gist of like, okay, we understand where there was a problem. They've already, you know, abandoned the This Is an Xbox ad campaign thing, which is probably wise because it was a disaster and a mess and all that kind of stuff. And so moving on, a couple of stories. We've got three stories here. We'll see how much we get into each of them. But they're all three fascinating, and they all three originate from this YouTuber called Kiwi Talks, who like talks to game developers, and just like pulled out some fascinating details about some big name people. Specifically, we'll mention Todd Howard and Gabe Newell here in just a second. But just like the fact that like this guy's making all these newsy interviews, it's kind of fascinating.
It's kind of like he's kind of got the Pop O'Toole, and nobody besides us know who Pop O'Toole is and what he's doing right now. But like,
Pop O'Toole Finds Out is a phenomenal podcast. Yeah. If you haven't listened to it, go listen. Pop O'Toole is great. Yeah. But YouTube and everything else, like, yes. Kind of like guy out of nowhere doing stuff like that, but with video games. So about Todd Howard, he interviewed a former Bethesda developer, and I'm going to butcher the guy's name, Dennis Mahones, or something along that line. Who worked for Bethesda for several years and talked about Todd Howard and said, I'll read this quote directly because I think it's helpful to kind of set the stage here. He is a phenomenal person. Is he perfect? No. Does he call the shots perfectly? No. I can't tell you how many times I told him, Todd, oh, that's not a good idea. That's bad. That's not good. Or I kind of kept my mouth shut about it. I'm like, I don't think that's so great, you know. And he goes on to talk about how kind of Todd Howard in his what maybe we'd call glory days of like great games that have come out from Bethesda in Fallout years past. 3. Yeah, thanks Fallout 3, thanks Skyrim and that kind of stuff. That like one thing that was healthy at Bethesda at that point was that there was this pushback that artists, developers, people working on this stuff could say, this is not a good idea. He talks about how Todd is great at leading a project, but doesn't always have the best ideas because nobody always has the best ideas. And that a lot of problems currently with Bethesda is essentially that Todd Howard has surrounded himself with yes men, and that just so many of the ideas don't get pushback like they should. And we've seen stuff like Fallout 76 or Starfield or other games that have their merits for sure, but also have kind of big structural problems that have kept them from being on the level of what we kind of associated with Bethesda 15 years ago.
Can I ask you a question about Starfield? Because this has been a debate that I've been having with Duff. Duff texted me like 3 days ago and he's like, bro, it's time to play Starfield. Y'all gotta play Starfield. He's like, I just downloaded the DLC. Like, they patched it up. They're taking care of a lot of the issues. Like, it's time. You gotta play. And I'm going to play it. I want to hear Duff hear me say, I'm going to play it. But I know what it's going to be. Like, are you and I speaking about this specifically with Starfield and Fallout 76 and some of the things that have happened? Are you and I just snobs? Like, is that what it is? Because I understand it's pretty cool. Especially on our rig that's old enough now, it's going to look great, it's going to sound great. I get it, but like, are we like snobs? Is there a massive community around these games? What I'm asking is, are they better than we think they are? And is this our fault because we're snobs?
I'm going to answer that, but not as directly as, well, I mean, I will say yes, we are snobs in a way, but we just spent a whole bunch of time talking about three games that are not quote-unquote snobbish games, right? That are not like these high-end, like really super highly polished, big blockbuster AAA games or whatever that we're really digging. This to me is the issue, is I can forgive a lot of issues in a game that provides me something compelling and isn't demanding too much of my time, right? And that's where I think a game like Starfield has a big problem. This is where I think like recent Assassin's Creed games have a lot of problems. Not that they aren't phenomenally well done in like, you know, some of the technical stuff, the design, the motion capture, voiceovers, music, all this kind of, like, so much about them is incredibly well done, high-end well done, but they are demanding that I dedicate most of my gameplay to them in order to get through them, while still having those same kind of structural issues that I'm willing to forgive in a game that's asking for 10 or 15 hours as opposed to a game that's asking for 40 or 50 hours of time, right? Starfield, apparently, and yeah, I've played a little bit of Starfield. I've spent 2 or 3 hours in Starfield. And the problem I had is it just didn't really capture me, and I was playing other stuff at the time, and I just haven't gotten back to it. And that feels like it's kind of a consistent through line for a lot of people in Starfield, is that it just, like, there's some really good stuff about it, and then there's some clunky stuff about it, and it just doesn't quite all come together as a full package.
I mean, that's where The Outer Worlds 2 is.
Yeah, like, but The Outer Worlds is half as long, right? Yeah. Like, that's, you know, and that's to me is the kind of difference there, is I can forgive it. And to be fair, I didn't play through. I've played a chunk of both Outer Worlds games. I probably won't get back to them. I know you've played a lot more of those games. It hits a soft spot with us where we like a game at and that kind of stuff. But still, like, same principle there. Like, you can get through them pretty quickly because they're not these big, massive epics. Bethesda wants to make every game be this big, massive thing. But unless it pays off in that whole package, I just, knowing on the front end that it's going to be a, like, good but not great experience, I go, I don't know that I can give 40, 50 hours of my gameplay to a good, not great experience. Where I got to be a snob is in that top-level game. And one of the reasons why, at least personally, I feel right now of kind of drifting, I haven't played a, like, big AAA game in a little bit, because it doesn't feel like there's a big AAA game that's worthy of my attention, because I'm snobby about that level of game. And so I'm playing a lot of other games that are not snobby games, but because they require so much less from me.
Okay. So the last one of those that you and I both played, I think we agree, is Expedition 33.
Mm-hmm.
And I after playing that, I'm like, this is what I want. Somebody give me more of this, and I will lose years of my life, 2 hours at a time, going, oh, I gotta get back to Expedition 33 because I gotta go do this thing or that thing, and then you spend, you know, an hour, and then you go back to work, and you're thinking about it the whole time, and you're like, I gotta get back. Like, that's, if it's that good, I'm willing to do that. I'm with you. Like we both said last show, we're kind of like in the desert, sort of. We love these big epic games. We love the one, Baldur's Gate is another example. Baldur's Gate's great.
Right.
And I want us both to finish it so badly because it's so good. But, yep, like, I don't have 400 hours.
Yeah.
Like that was one of the things that I thought about. After you and I talked about this and I started looking at other games, I was like, okay, do I go back to Baldur's Gate? Do I go back to Cyberpunk? I already have like three of those games that, yes, I know I gotta go back to. So, yeah. So my question is, what is the difference between, and I'm not lumping, well, I am for this question. What is the difference between those games? And I'm lumping them in with Starfield, even though they're not even remotely the same quality. What is the difference between those games and Grand Theft Auto?
I mean,
because it doesn't matter how long Grand Theft Auto 6 is, you're going to play it.
Yeah.
And I will say that I have not put nearly enough time into Grand Theft Auto 5, but I still look at Grand Theft Auto 4 and go, man, I can't wait for the day when you and I have got time and we can just sit down and like ramrod three of these games because they're unbelievable and I don't care how much time it takes. What's the difference?
I mean, I think that's the difference, right? It's just a tier difference. And I think if you would have asked us before Cyberpunk had come out, because I think the Cyberpunk launch and all those issues around that and everything else when the game came out, we probably would have considered Cyberpunk to be one of those games that we wouldn't care how long it is, we were going to sit down and play through it. And then it came out so broken, and that messed that up, right? And I'm Grand Theft Auto 6 could do that same thing, that it comes out and it's broken or it's a mess or whatever, and it doesn't get that response from us. We're assuming that Grand Theft Auto 6 is at the same level of 5 and 4. And if it is, you're absolutely right. We're going to play through it because those games are so phenomenal. The Starfield just isn't like that level. And right. And Baldur's Gate, I would argue, is. Baldur's Gate, it for is. Me personally, absolutely. Was just... It launched right when I had a kid. Like, I played Baldur's Gate on the Steam Deck in the hospital while my son was in the hospital, like, after he was born. But, like, it was just a timing issue that, like, it just messed me up where I couldn't put the time into that game that I would have otherwise, right? Cyberpunk, we've talked about the issues. Cyberpunk is the one I keep going, like,
yeah,
I don't have it installed right now. And I keep, like, rolling over into my Steam library going, oh, am I going to click it? Oh, no, let me go play this for a little bit and see. And then coming back to it and going, here I go.
That Cyberpunk is the only thing I'm... Okay, no, that's not true. So Cyberpunk and Baldur's Gate 3 are the only two things on my system right now that I know that if it takes until I die, I'm going to finish those two games, because those are two of the greatest games ever made.
Yeah.
Period.
Certainly in recent memory.
Right. So I know those two games I will eventually finish. I may nickel and dime it for the rest of my life, because I text you every time I boot up Cyberpunk and go, yep, this is so awesome.
Yeah.
It's like my favorite thing ever. And I played for 2 hours and then I put it down for 3 weeks.
Yep,
like,
exactly.
Like that's, but those games I know I will eventually finish, but they're the only two games on my rig that applies to.
Can I tell you my issue with Baldur's Gate, and we'll move on, because I do want to get this other news thing in real quick. But my issue, because I tried firing up Baldur's Gate, I mentioned this whenever I broke my hand and wasn't able to play as much. I couldn't play with the controller. I was looking for more mouse and keyboard, and primarily mouse games, and Baldur's Gate is great at that. It has such a high, like, learning curve.
Yes.
That after I didn't play it for a long time and I came back, I was like, I don't remember how I spec these characters at all. And I'm just, like, spending so much time going back and trying to reorient myself with this game of what, like, spells I have and what equipment I have and how I was playing them and who my party was. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I kind of remember I was doing this and that. And it just was so overwhelming. Cyberpunk isn't nearly as bad about that. And why I'm now thinking, like, I might pick up Cyberpunk again real soon, because I could jump back into that fairly easily. I remember better kind of just story beats of it. But also, like... it has its own systems that you got to remember and do, but it's just not nearly as complicated.
Every time I pick it up, and it may be in that runner thing, because every time I pick it up, like, I do a few upgrades. I upgrade my skills and I do some upgrades, and I start doing the Netrunner thing where, and I still say the NCPD things are the best content in the entire game. Because I can go run a couple of those in like an hour and be done. And it's like, it's so much fun, and I can just sort of pick it up. And on Baldur's Gate real quick, and then we'll move. I feel like, and I know I've said this for the last 20 years, I feel like if there was ever a game that you and I are like, okay, you just retired from your job, you got a 401k, everything's good, what are we going to sit down and play for 2 weeks? The answer is Baldur's Gate.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
We may lock ourselves in a room and be drunk for 2 weeks, but it'll be the best 2 weeks we ever have in our lives. Like,
yes. Yeah, I totally agree. But it's one of those things that you just have to have that time dedicated to. And right now, I just don't have that time. So, anyway, one more quick story here from Kiwi Talks, because, again, for whatever reason, just making a lot of news here. This one about Gabe, and it's just the exact opposite of what we talked about with Todd Howard, which I love. So this is from Josh, again, I'm probably butchering a name here, Weir, who was the lead project designer for Portal 2, obviously working really closely with Gabe here, and talking about, you know, Gabe as a, you know, personality and being both so successful, like, creatively and in the business world with Valve and Steam and everything else. But talk about how Gabe took a step back once he recognized that everybody around him had become yes men, about how he says, quote, he's talking about kind of Gabe here being in, you know, wanting to be a part of a team, but figuring out like it just wasn't working as well anymore. He says, quote, because people would be like, whatever you say. And he was more like, no, I want to be part of a team, come up with ideas. And that just wasn't what people were willing to do with him being a part of a team, because he was the head guy. And so his ideas would always be like, oh yeah, that's a great idea, even if they really should have pushback on him. And he was like, this just isn't sustainable. I can't be a part of this, and had to kind of figure out a different way that he couldn't interact with the team like that anymore because of his kind of stature in the company and in the industry, much like Todd Howard. Very similar kind of situations where they both have this monumental success with great creative output earlier in their careers. Mm-hmm. But Gabe saying, I can't be on this team leading the creative design of this because people are just going to go with whatever I say, as opposed to giving me real pushback. And that is, you know, we deify Gabe too much often.
We
for
do.
Lots of things.
But hearing
yeah. something like that, I'm like, good
that's
on you, man.
Right.
Like that's
right.
what we want to see.
Because I think when it comes down to it, like, you can talk about the yachts and all the stuff that people talk about with Gabe. At the end of the day, I think Gabe's just a guy that likes games.
Right.
And if it wasn't for what you just mentioned, if Gabe was able to be a part of the team and to handpick, you know, some people that he really trusted and really believed in, I believe we'd have Half-Life 3. I think part of the reason that we don't have Half-Life 3 is because he stepped back. Look, let's be real honest. At least in one of your jobs, you are in a management role. I am currently in a management role and in one of my jobs. And so the deal with that is that your entire job is just to oversee it. And you really want to say something, especially when you're control freak like we are.
Yes.
We both are. Like, we have certain ways that we like to do things. And you really want to say something, and then you have that little thing in your brain that's like, I can't do that anymore. That's kind of their thing, and it's really hard. But you just have to like walk away. And I think that's where he is.
Yeah, for sure. And again, good on him for recognizing that and you know, making that pivot, transition, whatever you want to call it. And obviously does fine on the business side of things too. And Valve still makes great stuff, but something like Half-Life 3, we'd like to see, guys. I just need to get around to it.
I think if he was involved, we would have it.
I do too. Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. So anyway, we need to wrap quickly on releases. Pragmata, the new Capcom game with the weird like little girl robot thing. 86 on Metacritic. People dig this
thing. Apparently
it's pretty solid. Capcom has kind of been on a roll.
Yeah.
Like just putting out both like remakes and new stuff. And it's kind of crazy. Mouse PI for Hire, the black and white detective first person noir.
Wow.
It's out. It's an 81 on Metacritic, which again, not bad. The one I wanted to mention though is on Game Pass. I just saw this on Game Pass. And has a 95, so pretty good. Wow. Officially on Xbox and PS5 now is Hades 2. And so if you have Game Pass, you haven't played Hades 2 yet.
I'm so glad I can't play that!
It is very, very twitchy. But man, it's great. And so if you haven't played Hades 2 yet, I would recommend it. And then one more that I saw on Game Pass that I'm really interested in that we saw at one of the things from last year. Replaced, the 2D side-scroller kind of 1980s-ish. It reminded me of flashback of game way, way, way back in the day.
Yeah.
Has a 78, but I've heard people really enjoying it. And again, it's on Game Pass.
Sam's like, gotta play it. So
yeah, it has Sam written all over, but it's super cool vibe and fun looking. And so, yeah. People of note, we mentioned before, but that just came out a week or so ago. Has an 80, and so again, solid B game. So does Starfield. Has an 80 on PS5. The PS5 version of Starfield just launched, and so it's back in the news because of that. And so, a point in time where lots of games are coming to a different platform, not necessarily new games, but new games on platforms. But yeah, Hades 2, worth your time. Pragmata, apparently worth your time. So check
Real
out some
quick,
new games.
We talked last show about how Sony was stepping back from releases across platforms.
Yeah.
I know Pragmata was not one of those that's still... You know, they committed to release that. I saw something else on Steam yesterday that I did not expect to see, and for the life of me, I'm blanking. I can't remember what it was. But I'm wondering if they are kind of feeling that out as well, because I'm like, hey, I didn't expect to see that. I think this issue with Game Pass is affecting everything.
Oh, sure.
Like, everybody's trying to figure out what to do. How do we handle this? And I think it's even affecting Sony to a point, because they have a walled garden problem. They have a, you know, and I think it's really interesting. And so the next few months, And we don't have time to talk about this. We got to go. But, like, the numbers aren't good in gaming right now. Like, it's not growing. I've seen that on YouTube from a couple different people. All of this stuff is drastically affecting the industry as a whole. And honestly, for the first time in a while, I don't know where we're going to end up. And yeah, we can come back to AI and how that's affecting everything, because nobody can buy anything. It's a whole thing. Yeah, I'm all of that to say, I don't know about you, but I'm for the first time in a while, I'm feeling sort of uncertain.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. And again, we won't get into all the details of it right now. The industry is not growing in the traditional sense, right? And like, that's where it feels really weird. It's like, it is going to a new place and we don't know what that place is. Hardware is different. It's getting more expensive as opposed to cheaper over time, which is weird. We've talked about that there's an anticipation that the Switch 2 price is about to go up. And so get one before it does.
Yeah.
If you want one, kind of thing. Like, it's just a weird time in the industry. And yet, if you want a game, there's a game for you. Like,
yeah.
There's just a billion games.
There's
out there.
So many
there's
games.
There's Retro Rewind that we just talked about for whatever long, like, who's playing that game? We're playing that game. Like, and it's just, like, that's the hope for me in the game industry, is that just so much content that, like, can be so niche and appeal to certain audiences and be great. And that didn't exist before this period in time like it does now. And so, lots of questions, lots of concern about where the industry is going, and I share a lot of that. But also, I do find some hope in who's making games, and that there is a change of the power structures and stuff feels much more democratized than it used to be. And it's a weird, weird time in gaming, and what it looks like 5 or 10 years from now, I have no idea.
We'll talk about that more later because we gotta go. But that's been on my mind the last couple of weeks, and I'm sure it's on everybody else's mind too. You would like to let us know what's on your mind, there's a couple of different ways you can do that. You can call us and leave a voicemail at the voicemail line at
509-GAME-210.
Yes, it still works because I called and yelled at Google.
Appreciate that.
We have it for a while longer until they try and take it again, away from us again. So please take advantage of that. You can email us, gaminguncensored@gmail.com. We do answer those. We do pay attention. And I wish somebody would email us that wasn't trying to sell us something.
Right.
Or trying to get their,
of that.
Trying to get their person on our show.
Yes.
If it was somebody we were super interested in, we'd be all over that. But it hasn't been. But yeah, definitely email us. Let us know what you think. Call us. Get over to the Discord. Lots of cool stuff going on over there. Go to the website, because the website is sucking less. I'm continuing to work on that. So definitely go there, gaminguncensored.com. Believe it or not, for those of you that are still paying attention to the Facebook page, and I know there's still several of you over there that have not made it to the Discord, I'm working on a way to get content easily over to the Facebook page that is on other platforms, whether it's a new show or whatever. I'm working on that, so please hang on. There's several of you guys that we haven't seen at the Discord. We haven't seen you, please. It's not that hard to get over to the Discord.
Yeah.
It's a great community over there. We talk about it a lot. But if you are on the Facebook page and you have not moved to the Discord, please do so. Yes, I'm working on a fix, but you should not wait on that. Other than that, is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
All right. I'm Jamie. He's Tommy. We are Gaming Uncensored, and we are out.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gaminguncensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.